Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is a response midday for Rosh Chodesh Av. Today we're going to see a response by Rav Bistal Stern from Shut Pitzel HaChokma, Chelek Vav Simon Chaf Tet. Part 6, response number 29. We start with gratitude to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Abramowitz, and to David Hochhauser for posting the Shiurim. And if you're listening to this year, you probably already know, but response that day is now, basically, as we go through the second year of it, it's going to be 7 days a week. And the first year of it was only 5 days a week, Sundays through Thursdays. And God willing, over the course of this year, I'm going to fill out those missing pieces. Although, again, I'm sorry that I'm saying it now, and I hadn't said it before, because if you're encountering this response, you probably already know that. In any case, here's the question that was presented for Sol Stern. It's a question that comes up in lots and lots of contexts, and I think his answers are really, really interesting. So the question is, and wherever the person who was asking the question lived, they had two Torah scholars who were both Gedolim, right? Both recognized Torah scholars. They were both people who are worthy of paskening on halacha, of ruling on halachic issues. They're both, as far as anybody knows, Yirei Shamayim, they're equally God-fearing. And let me just pause myself to add in, my name is Gidon Rothstein, and my email is grothst@gmail.com. Let me just pause to add in a reminder that the requirement of Yirei Shamayim is not like a pro forma one. It's really a very important one. If you have two Torah scholars, both of whom who know a tremendous amount, but one of whom, you know, affiliates with the Reform movement, so that would be different. And it comes up today because there are people in our world today who's Yirat Shamayim, and they will never admit it. Meaning, even people in the Reform movement don't say, "Oh, I'm less of Yirat Shamayim than those Orthodox Jews." They say, "I'm doing the right thing." But when one is picking a posnik, when one is picking somebody to ask halachic questions to, that element of it is an important one. It's necessary that the person who you are asking, who we are checking with, is somebody whose knowledge is held within a framework of the proper, of some version of the proper fear of heaven. So those are complicated questions of how you pick these things. But in this case, those questions aren't the issues here. Right? Those are hard questions, but that's not the question for Revitalos. The question is that when you look to one of these Torah scholars, he's more lenient than the other. And it's particularly true in the question in terms of marot. Marot are when women become nidot, when they menstruate. So there's a process of becoming tohorot. They have to go through a period, we have 7 days, where they don't see anything of blood-like material, and then they go to mikvah, and then they're done with being nidot for that month, and then the husband and wife commits relations, and all those kinds of things that go on. So now, sometimes in the course of those 7 days, as a woman's checking herself, something comes up, meaning she'll check with a cloth, and on the cloth you'll have something. So there's certain some things that are not a problem at all. Let's say if there's some clear kind of a liquid, then it's not an issue. But things that are in the range of red, but not only red, right? There are some browns that count. There are blacks that might count. That's a whole area of halakhic expertise that's called marot. Being able to know, so marot, or you show these things, or tamim, or stain. So it's being able to check these things and know what they are. So you can have a situation where somebody becomes known to be a person who's machmir. He'll see things, and when he sees them, he thinks, no, I think that falls under the rubric of those marot, of those things that come out of those liquids and those colors that signify that she is still a Tumea, and she has to start her count over again. You have another person who's more Mekel. Now, more Mekel, more lenient, doesn't mean he just thinks, yeah, it's not so important. That's not a kula. That's just not caring about halacha. More Mekel means he has come to believe, for whatever the reasons are, that X color doesn't fall into the category of those things that she's required to count or start over again. So the basic question is, can I pick and choose? Can I say I'm going to go to the cooler guy? And that's the basic question. But in the particular case also, a person went to the cooler guy, the guy who's more lenient, and he said, you know what, this Maria is allowed. She's allowed to continue her count. And then that person, for whatever reason, and we'll get to, in the end of the response, we'll get to the discussion of, a little bit of discussion of when you are or aren't allowed to do that, went to the other person who said, now this is the more machmir, this person known to be more generally machmir, more stringent, but in this case, he not only said he was more stringent, he said, it's dam mamash. He said, it's literally blood. So the questioner thinks, maybe that's even different. Maybe, even if it's true that I'm allowed to rely on the leniencies of the first one when it's a halachic question, but here, it seems like he got the facts wrong. He said, it's okay, and the second guy says, that's blood. So if it's blood, she clearly has to start her count over again. So that's his question. So his question is, can you rely on a lenient Rav in general? Right? Can you go to him? Even though you know there's another Rav out there who's Machmir. Now, Sol Stern is going to do an excellent job, and I think not even such a stringent job, but an excellent job of covering the issues that come up. And then there's a lot of putting the meat on the bones of it in practical cases. As we'll see, he's going to give you broad categories, and you're going to figure out who fits into which category. So let's see what he has to say, and I'll give you the examples as we get to them. So I apologize. One last thing in the question was the person that asked the question said, so maybe we do have to follow the machmir opinion, the stringent opinion when it comes to Torah law, but in rabbinic law, we don't. So Rav Stern starts his answer with a Gemara in Psachim Nun Bet Hamid Bet, 52b. Gemara there tells the story of Rav Safra, who left Eretz Yisrael and went to Chutz Laaretz. He was going on a trip, right? He was going to Bavel, let's say. So as he's leaving, or not as he's leaving, but he leaves, and then he realizes he has some wine with him of Shemitah wine. You're not allowed to take Shemitah wine outside of Eretz Yisrael. This is actually a problem that came up just recently. Somebody pointed out to me that in their community, they have a person importing Israeli wine, some of which was from Shemitah years, but you're really not allowed to export Shemitah wine. So that's the whole Reto. If it's wine that was made on a farm or in a vineyard, that vineyard is the right answer, farm is the wrong answer. In a vineyard that was part of the Hetzer Mechira and sold the wine, sold the land of Israel to a non-Jew, you can make the argument that that's not Shemitah wine, and therefore you can export that. But this is wine, I think they said probably on it, that was from Otzer Beit Din. Part of the whole point of Otzer Beit Din is that they say that we keep Shemitah. So if that's true, you're not supposed to export it. So this Gemara is talking about, he had wine from Shemitah year, and he took it out to Eretz Yisrael. And now when it comes to the wine like that, it turns out, when it comes to Perot Shvi, there's a debate in the Mishnah as to whether the person who took it out has to bring it back to Eretz Yisrael and get rid of it there, or can just get rid of it where he is, right? So that's a question. So he's sitting there with two other Rav Huna Brei Ravika and Rav Kahana, and he says to them, not do you know the answer, but he says, do you know what Rav Avuha said about whether the halach is like Rav Shimon ben Elazar, that you have to bring them back to Eretz Yisrael and be mevayer them, then we get rid of them there, or no? So Rav Kahana said, Rav Avuha, I heard from Rav Avuha that the halach is that way, you have to go back. And Rav Huna says, I heard from Rav Avuha that the law is not like that. So you have two people who claim to have heard from their Rebbe opposing decisions in this halachic question. So that's a problem. One possibility is, theoretically, could be that Rav Avuha changed his mind at some time, or it seems like one of them misunderstood their teacher, and I've actually been involved in the stories with people who misunderstand something. Sometimes, unfortunately, teachers aren't always as clear as they could be. People get the wrong impression, and then you have, you know, conflicting reports about what so-and-so held. And that comes up in our times as well with great leaders. And so it's a reminder, as there's a Mishnah Perkei that says, that we should have to be very, very careful with our words, especially if we are, those of us who are leaders, would have to be very careful with our words so we do not misunderstand. So that's the first piece here. But so in the continuation of the Gemara, Rav Safra says, Nikota klala de Rav Huna biyadcha. Okay? So he says, and the response of the Mishnah is this piece of the Gemara, but the continuous the words, he says, the Rav Safra says, here's my general principle, and now in the Gemara, the continuation is that Rav Safra says that that I'm going to follow Rav Huna, that he is somebody who is known to be much more careful about following and about nailing down the words of the Rebbe, meaning theoretically, let's say two guys who go to the same shir, one of them listens well and thinks well and pays attention, the other one who writes what become, in my day they call it the Misora note, become the assumed representation of, what was it? So I think in our times, let's say, for example, Rav Hirsch Shachter, he should live a long life, was known to have notes on the Rav Shiurim that were considered to be extremely good notes, that they really got down what the Rav said and were really authoritative in terms of what the Rav said. So that would be somewhat similar to what we're talking about here. Rav Safra saying, I've got two versions of what Rav Avuha held. I've got two students of him, one of whom Rav Huna says, he said, I don't have to go back. And Rav Safra and Rav Kahana said, I do have to go back. But Rav Huna is known, this is what he's saying, Rav Huna is known to be the guy who knows exactly what Rav Avuha said. I'm going to follow that. Happens to be, of course, that in this case, that Rav Huna was saying the thing that theoretically he would want to hear anyway, because it was better for him to hear that version of it, because it says he didn't have to go back. So in that Gemara in Psachim, Rav Yosef applies to him the verse from Hosea 4:12, Ami be'etso yishal, my nation asks their sticks, their walking sticks, umaklo yagidlo, and their staffs will tell them. Now that's a way to denigrate Rav Safra for what he did. It's saying that you're looking for the answer that you want, right? That's what Ami Beit Yishol. What does it mean you ask your stick? It means you talk to your stick and you say, oh, my stick told me. What does your stick tell you? Your stick tells you what you want to hear. So that's a reminder to me, and I'm editorializing a little bit. I apologize. I don't really apologize. I mean, I'm saying if it offends you, I'm sorry you're offended, but it's a reminder that it's very easy for us to look for the answers that we want and then assume that those are the real answers, the right answers. Rav Yosef seems to be accusing Rav Safra of having done that. He had two possibilities. He would have to go back to Eretz Yisrael and not go back to Israel, and he found a way to pick the answer that he'd have to not go back to Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rav Yosef seems to be implicitly accusing Rav Safra of having done. So Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hananel there, as it happens, say that when it comes to Rav Avua himself and Rav Huna Breder of Ika, who said that Rav Avua held that way, so they're allowed to be lenient, the bright, the Katani Stamba, because they're paskining, this is what they say, they're paskining about a halachic issue. There's a brighta that says, just without any qualification, that Perot Shvit, that the fruits of Shvit, produce of Shvit, the Shemitah year, that leave Eretz Yisrael, you can get rid of them wherever you are, and that brighta is a Stam, and it's therefore assumed to be the opinion of the general populace of Chazal. And we generally assume that when you have a rabbi, when you have a populace, a general consensus, that they beat out an individual opinion. So they, what they were doing then, is what we're trying to say, what they were, Rashi and the Rach are saying, what they were doing is, they had a debate in the Mishnah, in the time of the Mishnah, they saw a debate of Tanaim, they had to decide what decision process to make about whom to follow, and they followed halachic standards about whom to follow. That's fine. Right, that's allowed, say Rashi Rabbeinu Chananel. That, in other words, because the question is, who was Rav Yosef criticizing when he said, Ami Beit Yishol, my people do whatever they want. My people do what appeals to them most. And if you're going to say that it's criticizing Rav Safra, then you have to say, why isn't it criticism of Rav Huna Breder Vika? So the answer is, Rav Huna Breder Vika is reporting to you what his Rebbe said. His Rebbe would have been doing the right thing because his Rebbe is paskining a debate among Tanaim when we don't have a specific evidence of the Gemara and the Mishnah as to how to paskin. He's using halachic standards to paskin. That's allowed for a qualified Torah scholar to paskin on halachic issues that comes forward. That's of course allowed. So what's the complaint about Rav Safra? Rav Safra wasn't doing that. Rav Safra had in front of him two reports about what Rav Avuha said. So meaning, if Rav Huna got Rav Avuha right, and Rav Huna is following Rav Avuha, and Rav Avuha did this, that would be fine. There's no criticism there. The only question is, did Rav Avuha really say that? Rav Safra isn't going back to the Mishnah and saying, I think I can paskin this. Rav Safra is saying, I want to know what the psak of Rav Avuha was. Now he has two people in front of him. One is Mekil and one is Machmir. So there, Rav Yosef said, you can't just choose to follow the Mekil for your own reasons, whatever you want, because then you're really just following what you want to hear. That's the way Rav Tzal Stern is understanding what Rav Yosef was complaining about. And then he points out that there are in Yeredeia, there are those who have tried to put together the klalim, the principles by which we decide who to follow what. There's a shock at the end of Reish Memet, a long shock about Hanhagos Horos B'Yisrael Hatzer, how we decide Allah when it comes to issues of Yisrael Hatzer. There's a Prima Gadim, long Prima Gadim in the Pticha Kolelet, who talks about at the very end of his opening to Shulchan Aruch, he talks about how if somebody's coming to ask a question, how they respond to the person, give the answer, how they deal with it, and things like that. The Tzlach de Pesachim, the Tzlach is really the Nora Behuda by another name. So the Tzlach de Pesachim, in his commentary, Pesachim says, it sounds like getting rid of Shemitah produce must be a Torah issue. It's a hard claim because I think we think the Shemitah today is a Rabbanan, but because he says if it was a Rabbanan issue, then Rav Yosef shouldn't have criticized Rav Safra, because in Rabbanan issues, we do allow ourselves to go lakula. Therefore, that's what he held. So it seems like, at least according to the Rabbi Yehuda, in the Tzlach, and it's commentary in Pesachim called the Tzlach, it seems like that we say if you have one against one, just two people, and you have no evidence on either side, in a Doraita issue, you should be stringent about it. But on an issue, you should be making, we are allowed to be making, we're allowed to rule leniently about it. Now, all of that, though, was according to Rav Yosef, because he's the one who said, you're going the wrong way. So how did Rav Safra do it? Meaning, when you see a Gemara like that, you can react in two ways. It could be you could say, Rav Yosef tells Rav Safra was wrong. Oh, Rav Safra was wrong, and it's just you're not allowed to do it. And therefore, if you're faced with a situation where you have two guys in front of you who are disagreeing about halacha, and you have no way, we'll get to, you have no way to decide among them, meaning Rav Avua had two Mishnayos in front of him, he had two opinions of the Mishnah in front of him, but he had a way to decide between them because one of the Mishnayos seems to have been a general consensus. So if you have a way to decide between them, then decide between them, and that's fine. But if you have two in front of you, you have no way to decide between them, that's where Rav Yosef was criticizing him, because it seems to be that their halacha would be, and I don't write the issue, you have to go to follow the stringent opinion. It's a rabbanan issue, you can follow the more lenient opinion. So what about Rav Safra? So theoretically, one could have said, well, Rav Safra got it wrong. See, that's why Rav Yosef criticized him. But Rav Stern is assuming that's not true. Rav Safra had his own view. Rav Yosef criticized him for that reason. But Rav Safra held that, and Rav Safra, remember, acted this way. He followed his opinion to act upon, and he held that even though it's one against one, and even though it's a Torah issue, this would be according to that Tzlach, it's a Torah issue, he thought he was allowed to be lenient because he had a reason to prefer one Pesach to the other. Meaning Rav Safra held that he had evidence that said it's not just one against one, because the one that he's following is somebody who's well known to be more careful about collecting and gathering the words of his Rebbe. Meaning the other Amora there, Rav Kahana, might have been a great Talmud Chacham too, and it might be that Rav Kahana said, listen, my Rebbe passed this way, but I passed this way, that would have been a whole discussion, but that's not what's going on. The discussion was about what did the Rebbe say, what did Rebbe Avuha say, and in that context, Rav Safra said, I've preferred it if Rav Safra had said this his whole life, right? If we had other cases where Rav Safra had announced his understanding that Rav Huna Brady Ravika was better at collecting the traditions of Rebbe Avuha, and that might be part of what Rav Yosef was criticizing. I mean, sort of, you know, you come up with a principle right when it's convenient for you, there's something that smell it could to Rav Yosef not smell exactly quite right. Rav Stern is saying, but that's what Rav Safra seems to have held. He had a principle here and he was following that. And then so that turns out that first off it seems like we're saying that Rav Avua had the right, even though he's an Amora, to paskin among tonight. You might have said we have to be machmir if it's a Torah issue, if it's a biblical issue, you have to follow the stringent opinion. So Rav Avua seems to have felt that no, if you have two opinions in front of you in the Mishnah, but then there's some evidence by which you can derive which way the halacha should go, you have the right to do that. You can derive the way the halacha should go. That's one important thing, and you can do it. In other words, you're doing it lefi, says Rav Stern, lefi shikul dato, by his best ability to analyze the situations. So there is the power even of a later scholar to paskin on those kinds of issues. More than that, he says Gemara in Erevin and Davavim in Ben is talking about the debates between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So in many cases, we have debates between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So let's say somebody wants to follow the leniency is on both sides. So the Gemara calls him a Rasha, an evildoer, because he's clearly just trying to get out of halacha. It seems that he's clearly just trying to get out of halacha. If somebody, on the other hand, the Gemara also says, listen, it says, I'll follow the stringencies of both sides. So the Gemara says, Aksil b'choshech olech, applies to them the pasuk that the fool walks in darkness because he doesn't have anywhere, doesn't where to go. I mean, he thinks he just has to do a chumra, chumra, chumra. So the Gemara there, later on the next page, in Zayin Amin Aleph, says, whenever you have people who have machloket like that of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, you can't follow the leniencies of both. You can't follow the stringencies of both. You have to figure out one or the other to follow. But Rav Stern points out that in that Gemara, and eventually there's all discussion there, he didn't get a discussion here, but Rav Shizvi eventually says that whole discussion was only about where the leniencies contradict each other, or the stringencies contradict each other. That it's not, in general, you can't choose the leniencies. That if they have a leniency in one area, and to follow that leniency implies something about halacha, or about this particular law, that when you apply it to another area, would lead you to be more stringent, and yet that person also follows the other side's leniency, that would be a problem. Those are leniencies, there are kulos, that are satre ha'adate, that they contradict each other. Based on that, Rav Stern says, but if an Amor had come along and gone through each of the machlokot of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai and said, you know what, or of any of the Tanaim who have regular debates with each other and said, you know what, on this issue Beit Shammai seem more correct, on this issue Beit Hillel seem more correct, and those issues are completely independent of each other, they don't have ramifications for each other, there's no interconnection among those sugyot, so Rav Stern says, I think that's allowed. And that's not Eitzo, that's not Ami Beitzo Yishal Makloya Gilo. That's not a problem of looking out. And even if that Amora ended up coming up with all leniencies, right? He tends to be an Amora who finds leniencies, and he finds leniencies, but he's done the halakhic process in each, and he's just come to the conclusion, on this Beit Shammai was right, and this Beit Hillel was right, or I tend to follow them, and this. Rav Stern says that's all okay. And it's okay because once one is a qualified posek, once one is a qualified Torah scholar to do such things, then as long as he's not A, being mechanical about it, and B, just to need leniency for the sake of leniency, but the fact that he ends up with all leniencies is not itself a problem. Now, you know, you might argue that if you find a guy who's just coming with leniency every single time, you begin to wonder, like Rav Yosef did, about whether he's doing the process correctly and just happens to be coming with leniency, or if he's waiting the process. You know, he's tricking himself into thinking it, or he's just deciding to follow leniency. That could be an issue. But fundamentally, if somebody is honestly and sincerely investigating halachic issues, and, you know, there's a string of debates between, you know, in our times you could say the Rambam and the Ravid, right, or the, you know, the Tosfos of the Rambam, or you have a string of debates on issues, and the person comes along, another reputable Torah scholar comes along and analyzes the issues and ends up believing the leniency is okay in each case, Rav Shmuel says that's their right, that's part of the process of Torah study. But that's only about, he says now, an Amora, a rabbi at the time of the Talmud, or a Chacham, or a wise scholar, or a Talmud Chacham, somebody who's reached the qualifications. He doesn't get the qualifications here, but so he has the Torah qualifications to make these decisions. That's already a first weak spot in our discussion, because sometimes you have people who assume that they're Torah scholars such that they can decide things, and they're not. So that's a first step, right? This discussion until now has been about the person who's going to decide on the nature of a halachic issue. They have to be qualified to do so, and then once they're qualified to do so, they're allowed to do so. But a random man or woman who has some halachic question, and then there are two rabbis in town who they know of who are poskening on it, right? And let's say one of the rabbis on Shabbos issues, right, and Kashrus issues is lenient on those issues, and the other one is more lenient on Nida issues. So you say, I'll go to Rabbi A, who's lenient on Shabbos Kashrus for Shabbos Kashrus questions, and Rabbi B, who's lenient on Nida questions for Nida questions, right? That's what you're going to say to yourself to do. So first off, it's a problem in this way, and it's going to be not a problem in another way. It's a problem in the sense that that's not a following of the halachic process, meaning where Rav Stern was comfortable with following both sides' leniencies was where the person making the decision was himself a decision maker, meaning Beit Shammai went through some halachic reasoning to get to their leniency on X halachic matter, and Beit Hillel went through some halachic reasoning to get their leniency on Y halachic matter. As long as the halakhic matters are not related to each other, it's eminently plausible, and you have this in the Mishnah and the Gemara in other cases, that, you know, someone like Echad, you know, Kibet Shammai Bechad, Kibet Hillel Bechad. You have people who end up just becoming convinced by their reasoning of Beit Shammai in this case, and Beit Hillel in this case. If that's what they're doing and they're following the halakhic process, that's allowed. But if I'm just a random guy, and a question comes my way, and I ask Rabbi so-and-so, and I ask Rabbi so-and-so, and they give me different answers, and I say, I'll follow the linear of so-and-so. That's not a halakhic process. That's me just choosing to follow the lenient point of view. And that's my stick telling me what I want to hear. And the Gemara in Erevin there says, when it says that somebody follows the kula to both sides is a rasha, so Rav Stern says, we don't pass it that way. We pass it only when they're contradicting each other. But even when they're not contradicting each other, where a person is just doing it, where they don't have the halakha right to them, follow the halakha process, he thinks that would apply there. And so if I don't know what I'm doing, and I have two rabbis in front of me, and I just follow the leniencies all the time, that's a rasha. If I follow the stringencies all the time, then Rav Stern is implying also, then I'm a ksil, I'm a fool, a ksil b'choshech oleh, because that's not what I'm doing either. So what do I need to do? We'll get to it, but I can't think of this as halakha process, me deciding which one of them to follow. In our case, though, he says, so if I have the psukim in front of me, and I always choose that, that would be where I have that problem. And we'll get to what we can do about that in a minute, but the case that we have, though, isn't quite like that, says Rav Stern, because we don't have a specific psak on this issue. We do eventually on the Maria that happened in the end, we will have had, but he's saying, the question was, am I allowed to decide to go to so-and-so on X topic and to so-and-so on Y topic, even though I know that each one is lenient on the topic that I'm thinking of going to them to? That, says Rav Stern, is not quite the same, because I don't know what they've paskined yet. I know they have a general tendency to pass in a certain way, but that's not the same thing, because it could be I'll come to them with a question, and even though they're known to be generally lenient, now they'll be machmir. So if I make so-and-so rabbi my posek for Shabbos and Kashrus, and so-and-so rabbi my posek for Nida, and I take all my questions to them, and I'm going to accept all their answers on those topics, so Rav Stern says, I think you're allowed to do that, because it's not the same thing. That's not that's not seeking out the answer that I want. It's right. So that would then mean, though, it would imply that if I already know what that Chacham has paskin on this kind of question before, that would be more of a problem. And then he adds another point. He says, let's say the more lenient rabbi is also known to be somebody who has made himself somewhat of an expert, spends a great deal of time on that issue and works really hard on that issue, and that's one of their specialists. Meaning, you have plenty of Torah scholars Now, I don't know if you have plenty. You can always have more. But let's say you have lots of Torah scholars who know a lot of Torah and can paskel halacha and are probably competent and reputable and qualified poskim. But then you have a guy who happens to have, within the broad framework of halacha, spent a lot of extra time on X issues. So, for example, in my looking to these responses, I've always noticed that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank and Rav Yitzchok Spector seem to have answered a lot of questions about the proper spelling of names in Gittin. So it could be that if I went to Rabbi X, he also knows how to spell names in Gittin, and I get a psak from him, and it's a chumrah psak, and that would be a fine psak. But if I went to, you know, I can't, sadly we can't go to them anymore, but if I had gone to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in his time, he would have given you leniency. So there, if it's known that he is an expert on this issue, so then it's even more room to say that I'm allowed to go to him on that question. Then that's not even Ami Beitzo Yishol, because I'm not going to him only because of the leniency. I'm also going because he's known to be more of an expert on this issue. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Zayin Amar Aleph, says something very much along those lines. He talks about two rabbis, two poskim, one who is Mitar, one is Mitame. One says something is Torah, one says something is Tame, or allowed, not allowed. If one of them was greater than the other one, then you follow him. And you follow him. So Rav Yehoshua ben Korcha says, well, in Torah law you should follow the Machmir, but in Rabbinic law you can follow the Mekiel. But the first opinion says, no, you follow the one who has the more, the greater reputation, the one who is known to be more expert in it. That if one is known better, then that's when you follow. Even in Torah law, even if they're being more lenient. Now, it is true, he says, that the Shach there points out that the Rashba says that, but the Rambam and the Smag seem to think that in Torah law you always have to follow the Machmir, even if the other one is more known to be a greater Torah scholar. And he passes, though the Shach seems to think the Halach should follow that way. But if you look in the Ramah, says Rav Stern, the Ramah follows the Rashba, and since the Ramah follows the Rashba, he thinks we're allowed to follow the Rashba as well. And so too says the Prima Gadim and the Petichah HaKolelet. And he says, and after a while, I don't know what his process of learning was. After a while, and after looking, I found this idea in the Petichah HaKolelet as well, the Prima Gadim's opening. So I don't know what his level of knowledge of it was, but it seems like he read it one more time, and he stumbled across this again and realized that if you're following poskim regularly, you know ahead of time what they paskin, even if you're always going to the person that you think is going to be the more mekil, that doesn't qualify as Ami Beit Yishal as sticking out a kula in that way. You're not called a rush or anything like that. Now, when it came to the specific case that he had here, you went to one guy and he was lenient. The other guy said, not only am I not being lenient, but I think it's an actual blood. So you get worried because you think if it's actual blood, I have to be more stringent, because that's a question of mitzius, not halakha. He says, no, it's not true, because it's not a question that gets, even the person who's machmir doesn't say it's actual blood in the sense that I say this is completely red and the other guy, I don't know what he's talking about. They both know that this blood is this stain is this color. It's a brown, right? So it's a brown of some sort that some people say it's tar and some people say it's tummy. The person who said it was tummy, that she had to start her count over again, when he said it's real, actual blood, what he meant was, I interpret this brown as being a reflection of this. The other guy interprets that brown a different way. So for sure, saying it comes down to a halachic issue as to how we interpret the evidence in front of us. It's not a question of mistakes, which actually dodges the question, because the question would be, if one person is saying there's a question of fact here, the other guy's just getting the facts wrong, so would you be allowed to follow the linear position? Now, I think Rav Stern would say, but from the fact that the other guy's posting that way means that he doesn't think he's gotten the facts wrong, and therefore we're allowed to follow that. But that's the way he puts it here. Now he throws in that, by the way, when you ask the second Rav, that's not great. You're not supposed to do that unless you've told the second Rav that the first Rav already paskin for you in a lenient way. Because the Ramah in Yeridah and Reish Mem Bet says that when you want to take your halakhic question to a second posting, you have to tell the second posting that you spoke to the first posting already and what the first posting said. That's because the second posting is, by halakhic etiquette, supposed to act in certain ways. Meaning if he agrees, he can just agree. If he disagrees, I think he's supposed to go back to the first Rav and talk to him about it, or send the guy back to the first Rav and say, go talk to him about it, because there's this issue that I'm not really, but he has to just blatantly contradict the first Rav. So that's a thing that he's pointing out to him. Especially as the Ramah writes there, that if the first person said it was lenient and they already acted upon that, then the second one is not allowed to say, just because I'm just based on his shikul hadas, his interpretation of the halakhic issues, he's not allowed to rule for them the more stringent way. I think you would have to talk to the first guy and see and whatever, and they have to go through a whole process. So then he gives a little summary. I cut out some of the pieces of the summary. He gives a little summary of what he said here, which I think are important principles to think about and to keep in mind. He's only one posik, and this is from Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av of Tafshin Mem Zayin of 1987. But what he says is, if you have two poskim in a city, right, when they're equal in their Torah and in their Yirat Shamayim, one is known to be lenient in a certain issue, another one is known to be more stringent, you're allowed to bring all of your questions, even on Doraita issues, to either one of them. And you don't have to say, well, on Torah issues, I have to go to the more stringent one. Nope, you can, as long as you bring your questions to a posek and you don't know ahead of time what he's going to pass on that particular issue, then you're allowed to. That's if you're going to pick them on for everything, right? Let's say you have poskim, and this is just a guy who's known to be a more lenient guy, and a guy who's known to be a more stringent guy. Now, let's suppose they split on issues. Still stern things. If you're going to bring all your needed questions to X, and all your Shabbos and Gashmi questions to Y, he doesn't think that's a terrible problem, even if you do it in Isidoraisa, but he doesn't think it's great. And it's not great because there it's more like shopping. In the first case, where you brought all your questions to somebody, but they were just known to be a more generally a more lenient posek, but they're a posek. They have the right to rule on issues, and you go bring all your questions to them. That's much better. But if you're going to start picking within topics, it's still not prohibited according to Rav Stern, because you don't know the answer you're going to give to this question in this instance, and therefore you're not asking your stick, as it were. You're going to, but you're picking a posting. It just has to be you're picking a posting within each topic who you think is going to come up with the answers that you like better. Under Rabbanans, though, he thinks that might be allowed, fully allowed, because under Rabbanans, we often have certain leniencies in how we deal with them. If a lenient rabbi, though, is also known to be more of an expert, puts in more time, and then you can ask him one of those questions. Meaning, so if I know there's a guy whose like whole life is Erevin, and I know that he's pretty makil on Erevin, there I'm not allowed to go to him, even if I'm only going to give him an Erevin, because I'm not going for the leniencies. I may in fact be thinking that, but I'm not only going for the leniencies, I'm also going for the expertise, and that's good enough to allow going to him as well, says Rav Stern. And then our final point, with this we'll close, that a reputable posek is allowed, even on a matter that's been settled by those who came before him, to reinvestigate it and to look into it and to decide it. There are rules about this, right? He wouldn't decide against, let's say, opinions of the Mishnah. Nobody does that. Against opinions of the Gemara, nobody does that. Usually not against Rishonim. And when it comes to consensus of Achronim, it gets more complicated. But fundamentally, as a theoretical possibility, a reputable posting, it comes to an issue, approaches an issue, looks at it and says, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know how they came up with that psak. I have asking this way. You're allowed to do that, because you're doing it by following your halakhic precedent. You're a qualified person to do so, even if you end up coming out with all bunch of leniencies that follow this view in one case and follow another view in another case, as long as they don't talk to each other. And that is Rav Shlomo Stern on Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av, telling us about how to pick postgame and what the rules are for how we can or cannot look for the leniencies that we're looking for. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and to David Hochhauser, have a great day.